Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back. And it is gone.
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left. Hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachik is racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly Gab Fest. Our technical director tonight is Luke Robbins with the television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron. And, Bert, it's going to be a big week for Major League Baseball here as they continue to try and return to play in 2020.
That's right, Mike. I've heard a lot of experts say maybe the biggest single week for baseball in a quarter century because the clock is ticking. We heard Ken Kendrick, Diamondbacks principal owner, earlier today on this station say that he thought they have roughly a week to 10 days to get an agreement done, and the calendar is starting to become an issue.
That's if they want to start by the 4th of July. He
right.
did say that there would, yeah. be, there would be some time beyond that if they wanted to get a season going. Let's get right into what Ken said. He was a guest with Dave Burns and John Gambadoro on the Burns and Gambo program this afternoon. Above all else, Ken Kendrick, the managing general partner of the Diamondbacks, feels that there is going to be baseball in 2020.
He's made it clear to all of us, and he's now made it clear to the union that we are going to play. And the details of the timing and the circumstances are to be determined, but I believe there is going to be baseball.
He referring to the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, in that the Players Association on Sunday made a proposal to Major League Baseball that would have played 114 games in the season between June 30th and October 31st, with the postseason scheduled in November. And according to Kendrick, that seems to be a non-starter.
We will not be playing baseball in the month of November or later. We will play whatever games there are to be played, including the playoffs, and it will finish at the end of October. The commissioner has the absolute authority to set that schedule, and he will not deviate and allow games to be played beyond the end of October.
As much as the discussion has been about coronavirus in public, most of these discussions have had to do with the amount of money owners do or do not have coming in with a lack of revenue. And that's what's been the holdup between the players and Major League Baseball. And for Kendrick's point of view, he has no problem sharing the information that's necessary with the Players Association.
Let me go on the record and tell you absolutely there is not one single scintilla of financial data associated with the Arizona Diamondbacks that I wouldn't make available to appropriate representatives of the players union or to any player who wanted to look at it.
Now, Ken Kendrick saying that today on the Burns and Gambo show, and our first guest today, I'm really curious to hear what he has to say, especially to that last comment from Ken Kendrick. It's unusual to hear an owner say something like that, but Tim Kirchin from ESPN is on the line with us. Tim, Mike Farron, Steve Berthiaume, how are you this evening?
Good, Mike. Good, Bert. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, Tim. Thanks for doing this. What is your reaction to Mr. Kendrick's comments?
Well, the first part of it, I think we all kind of heard the other day that Major League Baseball is determined to play baseball one way or another this year. I've been hinting from the people I've talked to for the last 2 weeks that this is going to be a 60-game season and not much more. And that might be where we're headed, because that way the owners only have to pay the players roughly a third or so of their seasonal salary, and the owners make all of this money during the postseason. So I'm convinced that baseball is going to do whatever it takes to play baseball this year. But the question is the union going to go along with MLB's plan? As for the second part of this, that Ken Kendrick says, I'll open the books basically to anyone at the union, that was remarkably frank and very refreshing, and I believe him. I'm wondering, though, are all the other owners or representatives of an organization going to be that open to showing the books? If they are, then a lot of the problems are going to be solved, but we'll see where this goes from here.
Hey, Tim, with that, I mean, and Ken's answer, obviously, in that was much longer, and you can find it at arizonasports.com, the entirety of the interview, but there has been some dispute over the revenues in baseball from what Major League Baseball has presented to the Players Association and what the Players Association believes owners are actually making. Can you take us through a little bit of where that disconnect lies?
Well, it goes so far back, Mike. It's no. I mean, I covered the 81 strike. Marvin Miller screamed at me a couple of times. Ray Grebe screamed at me a couple of times. So I know where this comes from. And then it got even worse, if that's possible, in 94, 95. So this has been going on for a really long time. And there's going to be this distrust between the two sides, almost no matter what, over, well, you're showing us what you tell us are your books, but why are we supposed to believe you? That's where the distrust comes from. It comes from years and years and years of this. And this is why it's so important for a complete collaboration between both of these sides if we're going to play this year. And right now, at least at the moment, we don't have complete collaboration on any level.
Well, Tim, based on what you just told us, you're the perfect guy to answer this question. How does the acrimony that exists right now, if any, compare to 81 and 94 and some of the other years you've seen when there's been labor problems?
Well, it's not as bad as 81. Trust me on that. That was nasty every single day. 94, 95 was really bad also. But by the early 2000s, when the Tom Glavins of the world stood up and told the union leaders and everyone else, we're not going to let this happen again. Baseball cannot withstand another strike or another work stoppage. Since then, it's been almost 20 years, things have been way, way better. However, in the last CBA, there's this underlying belief that the owners got the best of that. The union wants to make up for that, settle scored, and that type of thing. And sorry, this is not the time to be settling scores from either side. We have to get the game back on the field and then figure out the CBA after 2021 and free agency after this season. And that's the only way this is going to work, is when it becomes a how are we going to salvage this season, as opposed to how is this going to affect the game and the finances 2 years from now?
We're visiting with Tim Kirkchin from ESPN. You mentioned some of the more famous strikes, but even 2002 was a fairly contentious negotiation. It's been nearly 20 years since we've seen something like that. There are, maybe one player, I think, that's active as of now who would have been around in 2002. The number of owners have turned over as well. Do you think that there is an understanding or a full understanding of the history of what happened between 94 and 2000 that either side takes into these negotiations right now?
No, Mike, I don't. And I think that's part of the problem, is that a lot of the guys, including Tom Glavin, who went through it in 2002, had been through it before. But so few players and so few people in the business have been through a work stoppage, a strike. They don't, for the most part, truly understand the danger and the damage that comes with baseball not being played when it should be. Fortunately, Rob Manfred has been through all of that, which is how it's been explained to me. He knows the damage and the danger that can happen when you don't play baseball. And he's the one, I believe, who's standing up at some point and saying, this is not going to happen. We're not going to have a work stoppage or no baseball in 2020. We're going to find a way to make this work. And his way to make it work is to tell the players, we're going to pay you the entire prorated salary that you deserve. There's not going to be a second pay cut here. But of course, the difference is he's saying, well, we're going to pay you for 50 games or 60 games, maybe not 114 or even 82. And that's where the middle ground is going to have to be established.
Well, Tim, in Ken's comments earlier, and I know you only got to hear part of that discussion, it was about a half hour long with Burns and Gambo here a few hours ago, he was adamant in saying, and I'll quote him, in fact, here, there is a commissioner who has the right to enforce games being played, and I believe he will do so. What about the idea that the owners and the game can force the players to play games? How will that go over?
Well, that's not going to go over well. I think there's some truth to that the commissioner has some powers here. However, it's my understanding that if baseball is going to be played this year, it's going to have to come as an agreement between the owners and the players. And the players are going to have the right to say, playing 50 games with no fans in the stands and facing health issues and quarantine and testing issues, it's not in our best interest to play. So they have every right to stand up and say, we are not going to do this. The commissioner is going to say, yes, you must do this. And that's where another contentious argument is going to come up. And that's what I hope we don't get to, because then it'll get really ugly if we get to that point.
Tim, I'm curious about, you mentioned being back to 81, which was obviously a strike-shortened season. You have 85 where there was, two games missed, and I'm going to mess up the year, but I want to say it was 89. Was it 89 when there was a lockout? Obviously 94, 95. What were the things that broke the ice that allowed the sides to get together? What should we be looking for if we're clinging to glimmers of hope in this?
Well, the glimmer of hope is that somebody, it might be an outside person or certainly an inside person, steps forward and says, okay, we have to settle this. And that's what happened eventually in 81 and in 94, 95. And Michael Weiner, when he was in charge, was really good at stepping forward and say, all right, here's what we have to do. Somebody has to put himself in that position for this to happen. And again, it was Tom Glavin who led the players in the idea that we can't strike again. We can't do this again. I was there when it happened and nearly ruined the game. It can't happen again. That has to happen one more time. But to repeat, I'm just not sure that player is out there to tell all the young players who've never been through this, even the middle-aged players who've never been through this, that I've been through it. We can't let this happen. We need somebody to step forward. And at this moment, I'm not sure who that person is.
Well, the union leadership, Tim, does seem to be a little bit jumbled. All of us here know and respect Tony Clark, certainly. But how would you describe the union's faith in him at the bargaining table right now? What's the ground like on which he stands?
All right. Well, he's not a labor lawyer. And having covered these things for so long, it takes a labor lawyer to really get something done. Now, he has surrounded himself with labor lawyers and people who really understand what negotiating is all about. This is not going to not happen because Tony Clark's in charge. It's going to not happen potentially because of all sorts of other things. But Tony Clark has to listen to the people around him because this is a job for Donald Fehr. This is a job for Marvin Miller and Michael Weiner and those people who are trained specifically to do something like this. So I think Tony Clark will get this done one way or another, but one way or another, he's going to have to listen to the people around him who know the business better than he does when it comes to negotiating something like this, something really serious like this.
Tim, we greatly appreciate the time. It is nice to talk to you. Please stay safe, and hopefully there's a chance we see you at a ballpark somewhere this year. That would be really nice.
I sure hope so, fellas. I sure
Tim,
hope so.
Tim, just remember, we knew, but we didn't know.
The first time I've lasted 2 weeks. Thank you.
Well, you must not have been watching the Twitter fight then the other day. That's all we could think of. Tim, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim Kirkton from ESPN joining us for a few moments here. Eric Hinsky, Diamondbacks assistant hitting coach, going to join us in a moment. Cool story of something that happened to Eric at the end of last week. That's coming up next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll look back on J.D. Martinez's four-homer game with Greg Schulte, the voice of the Diamondbacks, in a segment we call Gubb's Greatest. But up next, there's a really cool story that Sean Forman is the man behind baseballreference.com, which is a website.
Who should be
that,
in the Hall of Fame, by the way.
He will
seriously.
Be someday.
He needs to be.
Sean is an incredibly important baseball historian in that he basically has brought the baseball encyclopedia to life. And so some really cool stuff that he's done. But he shared a story on Twitter 2 days ago that I thought was really cool, and it involved the assistant hitting coach of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Eric Hinsky, who's kind enough to spend some time with us. Eric, Mike Farron, Steve Berthiaume, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys doing? I miss you.
Oh, we miss you, too. Where are you, man? Where are you hanging out these days?
I live in Arizona, North Scottsdale, up in Troon. I've been, you know, hunkering down up here ever since, you know.
Watch out for the javelinas.
Yeah, javelinas, rattlesnake season up here, too.
What?
Yeah.
Before we get into this story, because the story was just so unbelievably cool, we got to know, like, what have you been doing? I mean, you're right at Troon, right? Have you been playing 12 rounds of golf a week?
Yeah, I'm a member at a golf course up here, and I've been playing probably five times a week, as much as my wife would let me. She was getting mad at me because we had to homeschool the kids for a while there, and I was leaving, and she was doing all the teaching, and then I had to kind of shut it down a little bit. But I've been golfing a lot and just, you know, being a dad, that's it.
I thought it was the kids who were the ones supposed to skip school, not the teacher.
Hey, I have so much respect for teachers right now. It's unbelievable. It is no fun homeschooling.
Now's a good time for the school to ask the Hinsky family for a donation, right?
Yeah, no doubt, right? I'd open the wallet.
So take us through the teaching aspect. What were your best subjects as a teacher? And you can't say gym.
So I found out that I really can't do seventh grade math. Pretty much is what
get in line.
It all boiled down.
Yeah, get in so, line for that one.
Wait, did you have Drew Hedman come in to finish that or not?
I had to bring Mama in to come finish. Man, I was history and language arts. I was good at those. Nice. That's where I drew the line right there.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen you and Drew work those crossword puzzles.
Yeah, we love them. It's we like to say we like to break a mental sweat as well, you know.
It's good.
Hey, might be a good policy for us to start on this show, Mike and I.
there is no mental skill on this program. I can assure that.
What about you guys? You've just been doing the radio show and just waiting for everything to start up, huh?
Yeah, yard work, walking the dog, some MLB the Show, Netflix, the usual stuff, and doing what we can to contribute on the baseball side.
Yeah, I know. I'm running out of stuff to watch, so I'm ready to start working.
That's good. Have you been out at all with guys at either Salt River or Chase? I know that they're starting to get together in small groups at both spots.
Yeah. So when Governor Ducey opened the state back up for professional sports, they opened Chase and Talking Stick. And so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I have like two groups of four guys, but we can only hit two at a time in the cage and on the field. So it's like a 90-minute window we have to work with four dudes at a time. And you know, they get their cage work, they hit on the field, and then we take some ground balls, and it's working out pretty well right now. It's getting them back on the field, and I think everybody's really enjoying it. You know, it's exciting. I hope we get going here pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm sure we're visiting with Eric Hinsky, the assistant hitting coach for the Diamondbacks. All right, so I want to ask you about this story. Sean Forman, who runs baseballreference.com and Sports Reference, which is, has basketball, football, hockey websites, all of that, told a story on Twitter the other day from a friend of his who was friends with the old groundskeeper for the Phillies who did the boxes in the outfield. And I'm curious, I mean, how much of this story did you know before – before you got involved in this with the your big moment from Game 4 of that World Series in 2008?
What do you mean? But the guy that sent me the email?
Yeah,
or
yeah, about everything about the woman that who had your ball,
nothing.
Who I guess passed away. So yeah, you didn't know anything about this. So
I'm literally sitting, I'm looking at my emails in my office the other day, and there's an email on my work email for the D-backs from a guy named Bradley Mall, right? And I'm like, and it says, the header's like 2008 World Series Game 4 home run. And I'm like, all right, I got to look at this, see what it is. It's pretty good. He wrote some stuff like, you know, greetings from Philly. While you're at bat against Brad Lidge in Game 5 is cemented in Philly's lore, because I did strike out to lose the World Series that year. He said he'll go on record to say that he thinks I checked my swing on strike 2. And then plus he got another ring at our expense the next year, so we're all good, right? Because I was with the Yankees next year in 09, and we beat the Phillies. So, you know, right away, the guy was – it was like a clever email. And he was like, you know, just, hey, I'm writing because I a friend of mine was married to the head of landscaping at Citizens Bank Ballpark, and she sadly recently passed away, which is horrible. And I was given a box of Phillies memorabilia that included the ball, which she retrieved the morning after the game. And he's like, I recognize you have 3 World Series rings, but I thought you might like to add this ball to your home run collection. Can I mail it to the D-backs office, Brad? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you know how it's 12 years later. You don't usually get an email like that, right? And I emailed him back and said, I specifically remember the next day trying to go find the ball because we were taking batting practice. I'm like, I'm going to go out there and the brick wall in center field and went into the ivy that was beyond the hitters or right in front of the hitter's eye. So, you know, as we emailed back and forth a little bit and he said, all right, I'm going to send it out. And right about that time, they opened up Chase for me to go back to hit with some of the guys. And sure enough, he sent the ball in like a Charlie Manuel bobblehead box. And he sent a picture of like Joe Blanton, who I hit it off of, and there was writing on the back of it. And this dude was like really cool and all in on it. And so then I snapped a picture of it in the cage when I was at Chase Field and said, thanks, man. Like, you're a good dude. Really appreciate it. And pretty cool story. Whoever this guy is, he was genuine and sincere, and he sent it all on his own dime. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and Eric, from what I understand, they had a baseball, and I think this is in part where Sean comes in at baseballreference.com. They had to do some detective work to figure out that it was probably the one that you hit, correct?
I don't know about that. Like, I don't know who the guy you're talking about from Baseball Reference is. I've heard of his name, but I've never met him. I don't know what they did to find out or know that it was the ball or not. But it looks like it to me. So, I mean, I believe it.
and as you said, the next day you're out there looking through the bushes trying to find it anyway, right?
Yeah, they always have this one security guard that lets you in the front to the clubhouse in Philly. And he's always like, he always says, what's up? He's friendly. And I'm like, hey, let's go out there and look for the ball. And he's like, man, we were already out there looking for it. Nobody found it. Like, I don't know if he just didn't want to walk out there or what. And she had already found it or something. But I mean, just 12 years later, I have the bat and I'd put the ball right on top of it on the mantle. So it's cool.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you mentioned you played in 3 World Series. You won 2 of them in 07 and 09, 3 straight World Series even. Where does that ball now rank in your list of memorabilia, the stuff that you've collected?
My own personal memorabilia, it's pretty cool. Like, to hit a home run, it was a pinch hit home run in the World Series. Not a lot of people can say they went deep in the World Series, so I think that's pretty cool. I have in my office some bats, like my first hit, my first home run ball. It's right next to that. And then I won the Rookie of the Year in 2002, and then the trophy's in there too. So I got pretty cool little man cave deal going on, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I want to ask about that Rookie of the Year, because I think the runner-up to you that year was Diamondback Spanish analyst, radio analyst Rodrigo Lopez.
Rodrigo, yeah.
How about that, huh?
So have you brought it around to taunt Rodrigo at all with it?
Oh, there you go.
No, him and I are pretty tight. So that year we actually went to Japan together on that Japanese All-Star Tour where we played against the Japanese guys, and we got close there too. So every time I see him, I'm always kind of like, yeah, man, I won. But, you know, he struck me out a couple of times. I think I got a couple of hits off of him, but he was nasty, man. It was funny. We did some battles together, and it's always good to talk shop with Rodrigo for sure.
That's great. Eric, does everything you've accomplished in the game going back to 3 World Series, do you think that translates with the players that you're working with right now? How much of that do you think is on their radars?
Yeah, I think it helps to have played and to have had success and to been on winning teams and know what winning cultures are and just kind of impart your knowledge on the players now. I mean, that's kind of why I wanted to coach when I started when I got traded from Toronto and went to Boston, and then we ended up winning the World Series. I went to three in a row with Tampa and New York. I started to realize I was good with the younger players, and I wish that I had someone like that really kind of take me under their wing when I was a young guy like that. And that made me want to help all the young guys coming up with their routines and what we do up here in the big leagues. And that's really basically why I wanted to coach after I was done. I knew kind of right when I left Toronto that I was going to try to stay in this game as long as I could. So, but yeah, I mean, I played for a good bit, 12 years, and saw a lot of things, had a lot of good teammates. I know how it's supposed to look. So, you know, it's fun to be a Diamondback and try to get us on that page.
You know, we know from being around you, your passion for baseball is one of the great characteristics you have. Another is that you're just an easy person to talk to. What do you think your greatest strength as a coach is?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I think it is communication, first of all. I think I'm good at relating to what they want, what they want to relay to me. I think you got to be available and love them. That's what I do every day. I'm available and I love them. And I tell them, like, hey, man, I'm with you. I got you today. Like, whatever you need to go through to be successful today, I'm right here with you. So I never make them feel like they're put out if they're asking for anything from me. I always tell them what I think, what I believe, never lie to them, tell them the truth all the time, and just be available and love them. That's my motto.
You know, well, and I think it's a great one, and I'm just kind of curious about this. I was listening to an old podcast with a basketball coach today, and he was talking about, you know, trying to implement his offense and all that, and it turned out that this guy got fired in his first season in the NBA and just didn't translate real well. And I'm curious, like, in terms of building trust with players, what are the things that you do? Is it just being a good listener, or are there other things that you do that help you build trust from the players so that they can buy into what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think honesty is first and foremost. Like, hey, this is me. This is what I got. You know, I'm never gonna try to steer you the wrong way. I'm always gonna tell you the truth. And just basically know that you're there for them all the time. Let them know that. And usually when that kind of happens, when that relationship's created, then if you give them like a little nugget that they have some success with, then they're like, oh, okay. Like now this dude knows what he's talking about. So it's kind of just like a building block. There's steps in the process to getting there and knowing that you're a part of that process for them, letting them know that, hey, that I'm having these at-bats with you. Like, my heart's right there with you, bro. Like, that's like the what I try to get into. You know, I always want to make them feel like I'm their friend, but yet, you know, I'm that guy that might tough love them too. So just being there for them, man. That's it.
And Eric, that process has become so much more involved as we get more and more information and data. It's you, it's DC, it's Drew. Can you sort of give us an idea of how that dynamic works? It's not just a hitting coach anymore. There's really a whole staff.
Yeah, exactly. We got DC calls it a three-headed monster, and DC is like has been so good with Drew and I from day one, saying like, I'm not ahead of you guys. We are three guys working together to get these guys to hit baseballs every day. So yeah, the process from us is us three going through what we do every day to make them have successful at bats on a consistent basis, and we're trying to win every AB, win every pitch, and we work really well together, us three. You know, Drew and I are pretty really good friends now from what we went through last year, and DC is like our guy. You know, so it's a good mix. We have fun together every day, and I think that's really important. Like, if you have to go to work and feel like it's a job, that sucks, man. Like, we go there and we have fun. We're ready to rage every day, and yeah, and the players see that. It's awesome.
Yeah, DC definitely leads the league in hugs.
Oh, gosh.
He's a hugger.
Sure. He's a big-time hugger. He definitely doesn't know about that personal space. He's all up in there. Great.
Yeah, I think social distancing probably is not DC's greatest strength.
It's going to be bad for him, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be really rough. It's his birthday today, so hopefully you got him something nice. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. DC, he's been so good to me that I just tell him every time I see him, I'm like, you're my guy, bro. Whatever you need, I'm here for you.
Eric, we appreciate your time. It's good to catch up with you. Stay safe and have fun working with the guys. And thanks for sharing. That's a really cool story. I'm really excited that you got that ball back. That's neat.
All right, nice talking with you guys. Take it
thanks,
easy.
Eric. All
right, be safe. Eric Hinsky, D-backs assistant hitting coach, joining us. Gubb's Greatest up next as we look back on one of the most dominant hitting performances in Diamondbacks history. That's next on the D-backs BP Show. Time for another edition of Gubb's Greatest, and today we are focusing on one of the great individual performances in Diamondbacks history in 2017, J.D. Martinez. Four home runs in a game at Dodger Stadium. And Greg, I want to go back first to July 18th of that summer. The Diamondbacks had been playing very well in the first half. They had just left Atlanta, where they'd been swept by the Braves, and were headed to Cincinnati to start a series. And right as the series was getting started, we got some pretty big news about a big acquisition with the Diamondbacks adding J.D. Martinez in a trade from the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, nobody could believe it. I mean, you know, everybody's looking for pitching pretty much, and they got to give it up to Mike Hazen. He went out and got the bat the Diamondbacks needed. J.D. had been having a solid year with Detroit. It was very apparent he wasn't going to re-up with the Tigers. So Mike Hazen pulled the trigger on the deal. He came over and joined the Diamondbacks in Cincinnati after that trade was made.
Next day he shows up. First plate appearance, I think even it was, right? He gets hit on the hand on a pitch that he's ruled to swing at. So he has two plate appearances, and he has to come out of the lineup. And I remember my reaction back in Phoenix was like, you've got to be kidding me, right? Like, all of a sudden, here they go out and they add the biggest bat available at the deadline, and he gets hurt immediately.
I may have even said, you got to be kidding me on the air. Candy and I kind of looked at each other as if, are you kidding me? This can't happen. We get the big bat, and everybody was fearing the worst. You know, he was going to miss, you know, maybe a month or two. You get in that wrist area, that hand area, and you just don't know what's going to happen. But fortunately for the Diamondbacks, he did miss some time, but he didn't miss a lot of time. And, boy, when he came back, whoo, did he have a run for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Oh, and right away, that first start back against Atlanta, homers, knocks in three. 2 days later, his first multi-homer game in a Diamondbacks uniform, and he kept hitting and hitting and hitting, and it was just one of the most incredible performances you've seen. And as the Diamondbacks got to the end of August, and remember, they were struggling a little bit, and they went to a series in New York, took 3 out of 4 from the Mets, and that's when they started to get on a run. They swept the Giants at home, swept the Dodgers, who the Dodgers had gotten off to the fastest start in the league and looked like they were going to be world beaters, and then started to fade at the end of August. But the Diamondbacks started putting together a huge win streak, and they went into L.A. on September 4th. J.D. had had a day off the day before, but that day off sure seemed to do him an awful lot of good.
Yeah, it sure did, and did it ever. And remember, Goldie had had a problem, and I think
it was his elbow.
As I recall, he was heading back to Phoenix for an MRI or x-rays or whatever, and he was not available to play that night. It was Rich Hill. There's that name again. We had talked about him previously in a big ball game that the Diamondbacks had played, but this time he's pitching for the Dodgers. He'd been rolling, and he was up against Robbie Ray in that ball game, and the Diamondbacks had actually cut 7.5 games off the lead going into that series. So it was a big start, and actually scoreless into the fourth inning when J.D. came to the plate for the second time against Rich Hill. He had a two-run homer to give the Diamondbacks at that time a 2-0 lead. Martinez hits a fly ball into deep left center field, and the Diamondbacks shoot on top 2-0. Three quarters of the way up the left center field bleachers is 15th for the Diamondbacks. And they move on top of the Dodgers 2-0 here in the fourth inning, scoring DeGrom in front of him.
That ball was launched. That was a bat rocket right there. Number 16 that Hill has given up, but J.D. hit that ball almost in the second section, way out in left center field. That is huge.
And this comes from a guy who pitched a lot of games in this ballpark and saw a lot of home runs. That's a long distance he hit that ball.
It certainly is. Not too many balls go up there.
And he wasn't finished on this particular evening.
No, and what's incredible about it is that, as you mentioned, this was still a 2-0 game as you get to the seventh inning.
Yeah.
And it was when Martinez faced Pedro Baez for the first time, so his third at-bat of the night. He goes deep again.
On Martinez, the pitch. And a drive to deep right center field. He's crushed another one. This one halfway up the right center field bleachers. And the Diamondback lead goes to 3-0. Martinez, another two-homer game. He's driven on all three tonight.
Yep, Diamondbacks added three more runs. So they built a very comfortable lead. They had a 6-0 lead. And we'll talk about Robbie Ray here in a couple of moments because his night was overshadowed by a guy who had four home runs. 2-2 pitch, and he struck him out in the high heat. Went upstairs, and Bellinger strikes out for the second time. And that's a new career high in strikeouts now for Robbie Ray with his 14th of the ball game here tonight. Actually, after Martinez hit a home run, Brandon Drury, remember that name? Mm-hmm. He hit a home run. They ended up getting a couple of more runs, so it was 6-0 going into the eighth inning. And then another pitcher, Josh Fields, had come on after he got pollocked in the eighth. J.D. Martinez homered again, and that made it his three consecutive home runs and three consecutive at-bats after he had struck out in his first at-bat of the night. J.D. launches another deep drive to right center. Another one, his third of the ball game. And listen to this crowd at Dodger Stadium. J.D. Martinez, not one, not two, but three homers tonight. And the Diamondbacks now are on top, 7-0. Diamondbacks need something good to happen to get J.D. another plate appearance to get a chance to get that fourth home run. And they were able to string some hits together in that ninth, Mike.
Yep, they added a couple more runs in the inning, and J.D. Martinez. Now, when he came to the plate the fourth time, I think you remember that you had mentioned that he had homered three times already leading into it. But what was your thought? Because the four-homer game is as rare as a perfect game in Major League Baseball.
Well, you know what I was thinking? This is being a little bit selfish, but Randy Johnson had thrown a perfect game. I'd call it a perfect game. And only 17 times in the history of the game had a player hit four home runs in a ball game. And I thought, man, this would be great. You know, I get a guy hit four home runs in a ball game just to see it once. Scooter Gennett, I think it didn't he homer four times mm-hmm. in a game that same season, right?
I believe so, yeah.
For Cincinnati, yeah. So my thought was, man, I'd love to see a four home run game. I think the fans would love to see it here. And all the home runs JD hit that night, this one was a no-doubter from the time it left his bat. And the 1-0 pinch. Martinez, another drive. He's done it. Four homers in the ballgame for JD Martinez. He's tied a major league record. That went into the left field bleacher, scoring Pollock ahead of him. And J.D. Martinez is a part of history tonight here at Dodger Stadium with a four-homer ball game, and even some of the Dodger fans are cheering here at Dodger Stadium. J.D. became one of 18 players in the history. Think about that. 18 times only it's been done. A player's hit four home runs in a ball game.
Incredible. And you mentioned Robbie Ray's performance, and it completely gets overshadowed. But Robbie, for the course of his career, has had pretty good numbers against the Dodgers, but he was at the height of his powers against Los Angeles in 2017.
7 2/3 innings that particular night, 3 hits, no runs, did not walk a batter, and ended up striking out 14. So J.J. Hoover came on, Bracho pitched the ninth inning, the Diamondbacks had a shutout, 13-0. And it might not sound like much, but they cut the lead to 12.5. Remember, they were 21 back right at one time, 10 days prior to that. So, as you mentioned, they were on a roll right there. It came up short, but it was a great Labor Day, to say the least, Monday, September 4th, a four-home run game for J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, Diamondbacks were in a stretch where they won 13 in a row there, and it was at the same time that Cleveland was in the midst of a long run that year. Remember, they won by, I think it was a 22 straight that year. So, I mean, there's the incredible runs that were going on at the same time, but that had to be one of the most fun regular season stretches, that two-week span.
It was because you just kept winning ball games. I had to go back. When was the last time the Diamondbacks lost a ball game? You know, you go back, you look at the record, and yeah. So it was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, no, it was a great run. And boy, J.D. Martinez's performance. I mean, you've seen some great performances from D-backs hitters over the years, but what he did in those 62 games, is there anything that's been quite like that?
No, I sure haven't seen. I can't recall anything like that. The 29 home runs in that amount of ball games, and he was doing it nightly. And, you know, we'd get shots of the dugout, and everybody's looking at each other, just shaking their head back and forth. Nobody could believe it. And he just kept doing it night in, night out. He had a terrific work ethic, Mike. You saw it.
Mm-hmm.
He had it down where he would do things before the ball game, and he would stay with that game plan. He went on and did it the next year in Boston. So Diamondbacks caught a run, a terrific run it was, and he brought a little bit more history to the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Now, his final 29 games in a Diamondbacks uniform, 19 home runs, a .388 batting average, and he slugged over .950. That's just incredible. Four homers from J.D. Martinez in a game at Dodger Stadium September of 2017. Homers in the final three innings of that one. Another one of Gubb's greatest here on the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
About a moment of our program this week. Thanks again to Tim Kirkjian from ESPN and D-backs assistant hitting coach Eric Hinsky for joining us today. We should mention, too, Bert, that the last week was a rough week for the Diamondbacks organization overall. We are the latest organization to be hit by COVID, and as you heard from some of the comments from Ken Kendrick at the beginning of this program, after he'd been on the Burns and Gambo show this afternoon, that the Diamondbacks obviously have seen no revenue during the course of the season. I mean, that's what happens when you don't play a game. Unfortunately, there were a number of furloughs and layoffs over the course of last week on the business side. And it was a tough day, as we said at least hopefully temporarily, for the most part, goodbye to some people that we've worked with for a number of years.
It's amazing, Mike, how COVID-19 and everything we're going through eventually finds its way to you or to your home. And I don't mean just the virus. I mean the effects of everything. And, yeah, our family took a big hit on Friday, and there's no other way around that. And we heard Mr. Kendrick earlier this afternoon say that they've had enormous losses, and they've undertaken a plan to reduce salaries. Every single employee of the ball club is taking a salary reduction, and those are they're the lucky ones, because and we include ourselves in that group because we're still here, because we've lost friends, we've lost colleagues, some permanently, some temporarily, and we wish all of them the very, very best. And I've tried to reach out to as many that I'm aware of, and just. And you try to figure out what to say, and nobody really has the right words, and I certainly don't now. But, boy, it was a very, very difficult day for everybody in the organization and our family last week. Well, so we're doing the best we can.
And certainly for so many people, and mostly for people who have given a lot to this organization over the course of their professional careers. And that's the people that I thought about a lot Friday were the ones who either lost their jobs or were furloughed. And how much they mean to us and have meant to us in our times. This is year four for me. It's year eight for you. Is that right? That's correct.
Eight
for you. So it's a long time working with a number of people, and it was a rough week, but. Hopefully, I mean, I think everybody kind of relates to that right now, right? I mean, that's what we're going through overall.
Well, they tried to hold out as long as they could, and they got everybody through the end of May, and then we just reached a point where, something had to be done, and then they're doing the best they can.
Do you want to mention that coming up on Fox Sports Arizona, that's on the TV side, on Thursday at 6:30, it'll be Game 4 of the 2001 World Series. So that'll be a fun one to watch on Thursday night, so we can check that out. By the way, there's also a bunch of cool auction items up if you're looking for a good holiday gift. Maybe Eric Hinsky didn't get anything for Darnell Cole's birthday today, and he wants to go and get DC Say and Eduardo Escobar autographed jersey. There's your chance to bid now on those, including in the new home uniforms as well, which are very nice. So that's a great collector's item. Those even haven't been worn. Can't say it's game worn yet.
I was really getting anxious to see them because I love what they did. They sort of simplified things, and it's a really nice, clean look in a variety of colors. And we haven't had the chance to see them yet, so another reason to look forward to baseball.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. You can go to dbanks.com/auctions. And we should mention that next Wednesday is the Major League Baseball first-year player draft. It's actually next Wednesday and Thursday. The first round and supplemental round will happen on Wednesday night, June 10th. There is a local tie outside of the Diamondbacks. So the Diamondbacks pick, I believe, 18th and 33rd on that day. But Spencer Torkelson from Arizona State University is expected to be the number one overall pick by the Detroit Tigers. Now, Torkelson had obviously a tremendous career at ASU, so it's worth mentioning him. And also, let's see, Akilah Williams, their shortstop, is another one who could go high, and Carson Tucker from Phoenix as well, who is the brother of?
Preston Tucker.
Cole Tucker.
Cole Tucker.
Cole Tucker.
Oh, from Ahwatukee.
Yes.
Yeah, Pirates.
Yes. Not Preston.
You know why I said that? Because I just watched the other. Yeah, I was watching the KBO game, and he was playing in the outfield.
Kyle Tucker is his brother, who plays
that's
the
it.
Astros.
Name that Tucker.
And that's
new segment on the show.
Brother to brother with.
Now that we're down to one Molina, we have to look for look toward another family.
Worried. I mean, we have ditched. We have it lasted just 1 week for what can Bert tell us about the Mariners? But
name that Mariner.
Name that Mariner. If you can bring that back, you know, we could.
Certainly. Pouring through the American League West in preparation for playing the A's and the Mariners and the Rangers and the whole thing. So hopefully we get the chance. That'd
hopefully
be great.
Do. Big week for baseball. We've said that the last several, I think, but now we're starting to get down to time to try and get a deal done. If, in fact, the season is going to start around the 4th of July, something's going to need to be finalized. I think it's as Ken Kendrick, managing general partner of the Diamondbacks, said on Burns and Gambo this afternoon. He said in the next week to 10 days. So hopefully negotiations continue between the two sides and we can get baseball back because I miss it. And I'm sure you do,
we
too.
We all do.
Yeah,
it's been a bummer for sure.
So we will be back next week, and we will have hopefully more good news for you. We'll talk a little bit about the draft, I believe, leading up to the draft on Wednesday night as well. So for our technical director, Luke Robbins, for Steve Berthume, I'm Mike Farron. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the D-backs BP Show.